given up hope and you're down in despair. When you've given up hope and you're down in despair. When you've given up hope and you're down in despair. When you've given up.
Welcome to Illuminations. I'm Renee Moran, and I'm joined by my co-host, Deanne Phillips.
This is a show about people making ripples in the spirit sphere in the 21st century. From ancient history to modern-day innovations, we are unpacking the stories of all kinds of interesting subjects, people, and events. We're going to the very soul of the matter, and we're bringing it to you.
Today, we'll be talking about sight and sound theaters. Sight and Sound Theaters brings the stories of the Bible to life as you've never seen them before. Imagine sitting in the audience, watching the stage production of Jonah as a huge whale swims overhead, or seeing Noah's Ark on stage filled with live animals. The productions utilize 300 feet of stage in a theater that seats 2,000 people. Sight and Sound has two locations. We're going to post some brief video samples on our website at redriverradio.org for you to see. But to appreciate this endeavor better and to tell us more, today we're joined by our guest, Jeff Bender.
And to tell you a little bit about Jeff, he has a master's in fine arts and has acted professionally in New York for 7 years. Subsequently, he went on to earn a master's of theology. He began his career at Sight and Sound as an actor in 1998. In 2003, he became a member of the Sight and Sound Story Team, where he's been actively involved in helping to create, direct, and write shows such as Ruth, Psalms of David, Voices of Christmas, Joseph, Jonah, Moses, Samson, Jesus, and the upcoming production of David. Jeff is the headmaster of Sight and Sound Conservatory, which is a 2-year program for professional training in the performing arts from a Christ-centered worldview. Jeff has recently been involved in Sight and Sound films as a writer and actor. Jeff Bender, welcome to Illuminations.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Jeff, tell us about your acting career prior to joining Sight and Sound.
Well, I started my training in the Pacific Conservatory of Performing Arts in Santa Maria, California, and then I was accepted into NYU's graduate acting program. So I completed that, got my master's there, and then acted in the city and in commercials and different things during that time. And then after about 7 years is when I came to the Lord, and my life sort of did a 180.
So what made you decide to pursue your master's in theology?
When I was in New York, you know, I had what I would say an inconsistent life a lot. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the Lord. And so I was really struggling, you know, to be honest. And I can remember one night, like 2 a.m. in the morning, just in my apartment in the city by myself and just going, if there's a God, help. You know, I just did that because I was just so lost, and I felt so alone, and you know, in the midst of 8 million people, you know. And so I took a summer off, and I'd done some commercials, so I had some money, so I didn't need to work. So I went out west, and I ended up in Montana at my aunt and uncle's house, and they were born again Christians. And so I spent the summer there. And then through that summer, I came to the Lord. And so my whole life, you know, turned around. Like it was a real, probably radical conversion. Would it be an understatement? Because then when I came back to New York, you know, so I'm telling all my friends about Jesus, and they're like, dude, whoa, you know, slow down. I'm glad for you, but easy, you know? And so then I got in a show off Broadway, and that had some success. And so I got a new agent, and she wanted me to go out to California. So I went out to California for the pilot season. It was like everything that could go wrong did. You know, the agent out there had a death in their family. She was gone for like a month. We had like monsoon rains in California. The freeways were shut down for a week. I mean, it was just everything was against. And I felt at that time that the Lord was calling me out of acting. And I was such a new believer. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know if I was hearing him right. I was just really at a bit of a loss, but I just kind of kept leaning on him, and I felt like that was really what he wanted me to do. So I laid it all down, and then probably about a couple months later, he called me to Bible school, and that was as clear as day. Like, I knew that was definitely him. So at the age of 30, after like doing the whole theater and, you know, commercial thing, I went to Bible school in Rhode Island, and I met my wife there. And then after 3 years, you know, got my degree there, and then we got married. And then I really felt like I wanted more training, because I felt like I wanted to teach, or, you know, maybe work in a Bible school or start a church or something. So she and I moved to Springfield, Missouri, and I went to the Assemblies of God Theological Seminary there, and then got my Master's of Theology there. And when I graduated there, I was like, great. Okay. So I have two masters, and right now I'm a waiter, you know, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I'm telling you, like, we could, like, you know, we graduated and there weren't like any, like, there were no job offers in the, you know, and so we're like, all right, Lord, what are you doing? And then some good friends of ours had gotten into this theater that they called Sight and Sound. And they said, you should come audition. I said, dude, I am done with theater, you know, no more. Like, I'm now in ministry, okay? So no more theater for me. But we didn't have any other options. So I auditioned, and I remember when I auditioned, the day I auditioned, Glenn Eshelman, who's the producer and founder of the ministry here, he pulled me aside in the auditions that day, and he said, I'm watching you, and he said, I'm seeing something different about you. And, you know, part of me is like, well, I'm so much older than all these other guys. No, the other thing is that, like, you know, because I was like, how can I say it? The Lord had done such a gracious and merciful work in my life. He had literally saved my life, not only spiritually, but also physically, that I was just like, I want my life to count for him. So I want to do the best I can, you know what I mean? To be fully engaged. And so Glenn was talking to me, and he said, you know, I just want you to know that, like, this isn't just a theater. He said, like, I started this so that I can share the gospel of Jesus Christ. And this is the most powerful, impacting way I could think of to do it. But I want you to know that's why we're here. And so, like, I literally started to tear up, and I'm like, well, okay, maybe I'm in the right place. And yeah, that was 23 years ago.
What was your first role with Sight and Sound?
My first role was John the Apostle in Behold the Lamb. That was my first role, yeah.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about the history? You were starting to go into it a little bit about Sight and Sound.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a cool thing. Glenn and Shirley Eshelman, you know, they were Lancaster County natives, and Glenn was a dairy farmer. Grew up on a dairy farm, and didn't know anything about theater. Nothing, you know. But he was an artist. Early on in their marriage, he got a job painting farmscapes. Because there's a lot of farms here in Lancaster County. So he would go, and he would people would ask him to paint their farms. Then he got into photography. So he was doing wedding photography. And then he started going out into the wilderness and into nature and taking these panoramic photos, big wide photos. And so I don't know exactly when it came together, but how it came together was there was a church function. And they asked Glenn, they said, hey, you have these great pictures, you know, these great nature pictures. Why don't you show the pictures for us at the function? So Glenn, being a creative sort, said, well, sure, okay. So they said, well, let's put some music to it. So they put some music to it, and they had the pictures, and then they decided to put some scriptures to it too. So they did the slides, the music, and the scripture, and like the church went crazy. You know, they were like, this is amazing. So then literally that night, they're like, the other people were there like, could you come to our church and do that? So he's like, well, okay, you know, so they did that. And then Shirley's uncle, Rufus, I believe was his name, worked with Glenn, and they came up on the way to dissolve from one slide to another, because he was like, I had sat in so many missionary meetings, you know, with click, 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 you know, from one slide to the next. He's like, I wanted those things to just dissolve so that you could just go from one to the other with the music and the script. So once they did that, that was a new thing. And so they were booked at churches every weekend, Wednesday nights, and they have four girls. So Glenn had the full-time photography business. He was painting, and they were traveling with this ministry, showing slides and nature, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful nature photos to music and scripture. So they did that for 10 years, packing their kids in the, you know, this, the whole thing, like just traveling. And then finally, one day Glenn felt the Lord say to him, you know what, instead of you going to the people, I want to bring the people to you. So he's like, okay. So they took some money that they had, and they rented out Lancaster Bible College, their theater there. And for the summer, they had, I think it was an 80-foot wide screen. And they did their pictures with music and everything. And it was a sold-out hit all summer. So they took that money, and they built the Living Waters Theater, which is just down the road from us here. It's about a 650-seat theater. And so in that theater then, they put some fountains, and they did their slides, and then they started doing live shows. And then they did Behold the Lamb, which was their first sort of passion play. Well, that was off the hook. People came, as many times as they could do it, they were sold out. So with that money then, they invested and they built the entertainment center, which is on the campus where we are right now. And the entertainment center was a 1500 seat theater. And so that was a wonderful theater. And in that theater is when they first did Noah. And Noah, with all the animals and everything, it's you know, progressed a little bit, the version you saw, but it's still essentially the same show. So that was a runaway hit. Like, so they were selling that out all over. And so they were able to produce more shows. But then in 1997, that theater burned. It burned down to the ground. So at that point, Glenn and Shirley really had to just take stock and say, hey, do we want to come back and keep doing this? Because they were in their 60s, I think, at this point. And then, you know, it's a famous story. But, you know, Glenn asked Shirley, and Shirley was like, well, I don't think I could sleep at night knowing that we didn't continue with the call that God gave us. And Glenn is like, I'm with you. I'm thinking the same thing. So they rebuilt the Millennium Theater, which is where we're at now here in Lancaster. It's a 2,000 seat theater. And that was in 1998. And then in 2008, I believe, we opened up the theater in Branson. And so that's where we are now. We've got a theater there and a theater here. And you know, doors are open, and we're sharing the gospel through bringing the Bible to life.
Jeff, the Eshelmans called the fire when the theater burned a miracle. Could you kind of expound on that a bit?
Yeah, I think the miracle of it is so much of even what maybe we've seen all of us in different ways this last year. You know, how God just works in the midst of tragedy. And things that you would never think of, that endeavors you would never undertake, come about because of tragic circumstances. And if you're open and if you're willing, then God does miraculous things. And that's what happened here, is that the ministry just expanded and became so much more than they ever imagined, you know, out of the ashes of the fire.
So the Millennium Theater is, how big is that stage?
We have a 300 foot stage. So there's a 100 foot stage, you know, just right in front of the audience, then 100 feet on either side. So you're on three sides, you have to say. So we have, you know, action going on here and out in front, above, in the aisles. I mean, anywhere we can bring it, we bring it.
How big is a normal stage, I guess you would say?
Yeah, well, like if you say a Broadway stage, for instance, they're much smaller, just, you know, because they're New York, is everything's crammed in there. But a 40-foot stage on Broadway would probably be maybe average.
How do you think that this large stage helps bring these Bible stories to life?
Yeah, oh, great question. Well, I think, you know, it's interesting with Glenn. Again, he was a dairy farmer, right? So just no real background, but just completely obedient to what he felt God was calling him to do. And Shirley as well, they were in it together. And so Glenn always thinks big. He just imagines big things, you know? So for instance, Noah was what we would call our flagship show. And Glenn got the idea for Noah at the Pennsylvania Farm Show. He had his daughters up there and they were at the farm show. He was a dairy farmer. So he's looking at the cows and everything. And he realized people love animals. Like they are just flocked around the animals. And he felt like right there, the Lord said, I want you to do Noah. And fill it with animals. So what he did was then he went home and he designed the ark. And you said you've seen it. Mm-hmm. At the top of Act 2, when the curtains come up, you're in the interior ark, right? And it's all around you.
How big is that ark?
It's 40 feet high and 300 feet around. So, and then we have a mix of live and animatronic animals inside of it. So that's how Glenn, you know, imagined it. Again, he's an artist, so he, you know, he drew it all out. But so the size of it then became sort of how we do it, you know? So big biblical productions, you know, with that kind of size and scope kind of became our calling card.
Jeff, you were saying, you know, after operating the theater in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, the original one, the second location opened in Branson. Why was that location selected and how did that come about?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting that we, during those years, we got a lot of interest in having us come to different places, you know. And I think it was one of those things that the leadership just prayed a lot about. And when the opportunity became available in Branson, it was something that really resonated with people. And so they went down and just through a lot of prayer and a lot of different meetings. But then when they saw this, the piece of ground that became available, that the theater is on there, that was like, oh boy, this seems right, you know? And so that's where we went. And it's been a really, really neat venue there. You know, I've had the opportunity to direct some shows down there, and it's a great area, great people down there, and it's so nice having our ministry in the Midwest, you know, in that area there. So that's been amazing.
So Sight and Sound has been called the Bible on Broadway. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, that's what people call us. You know, I think what we've always tried to do is we always want to strive for excellence, you know, because that was one thing, especially with Glenn, you know, that he wanted things to be excellent. You know, he didn't want, just because we're Christians, you know, it shouldn't be like slipshod. You know, we need to be excellent in what we do, and we want to bring a product that people are happy to, and when they come and spend their money and they bring their family, that's important. You know, we don't take it lightly that people come in and, you know, they're spending money and their time and they're bringing their family here. We want them to have a quality experience, you know, so we want our shows to be excellent. We want them to have high production values. That might be another reason why people sometimes refer to us to Broadway in that sense is we do have high production values. But then also, like, we want to minister the gospel to folks, You know, we want people to be able to come and see these Bible stories. And if, you know, if they're believers, we want to encourage them in their faith. And maybe they see the story in a way they haven't seen it before. If they're not believers, that they can be introduced to the Word of God and the love of God, and then come to know Him. I mean, that's our heart behind all of it.
You know, there's so many animals in Noah. All of the productions seem to have birds flying in or some kind of animals. Just how many animals are in Noah?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's about 100 live animals and about that many animatronic as well. So between all the different amounts, and some of those live might be, you know, 20 sheep, you know, or, 12 goats, you know, so it could be some of the same animals, but yeah, with horses and birds and goats and llamas and, you know, we got a water buffalo in there. We've got the ox. And then we even have, you know, actors in gorilla suits and chimpanzee suits, you know. So, yeah, it's a menagerie.
Who builds the animatronics?
We have built a lot of them, almost all of them.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple of them we have outsourced, but that's one of the amazing things about this place is that, you know, we have every department represented on campus. And so that's amazing. So our lighting, our costumes, animals, set design, set build, engineering, front of house, reservations, you know, it's all in one place. So that it makes working together just, you know, amazing because we're all here together.
How many employees are on the team?
There's about, and it fluctuates, but about 650 employees between the two theaters, yeah.
Wow.
The sets truly are incredible. Can you tell us about the set building? How many people does it take to build something like Noah's Ark on a stage like this?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it takes an enormous team. I mean, as I was just kind of alluding to, you know, we have the designers who work with the producer and the director to actually design the sets. Mm-hmm. And that's a good size team is probably, 10 people that touch that. And then it goes to the engineers and then they do all the structure work to make sure it can hold up. Because we have to have actors on it, and in Noah's case, animals on it. And they're 40 feet high, and they're huge. So many of those sets weigh multiple tons. So they have to engineer it so that they don't break. And then it goes to the shop. And then the shop is a three-phase process. You do the welding of the aluminum or steel sets. We have a CDC machine now, which helps. You know what that is? That's like they carves out big blocks of styrofoam and then they coat it, they hard coat it. And then we use a lot of that for the sets as well to fill things out. But then after they build the structure of it and hard coat the sets, then it goes to decor. And then in decor, then they, you know, paint it. If there's plants that need to go on it, you get the lighting outlets, all that stuff. So all told, there's probably at least 120 people that are touching those sets.
The Sight and Sound Productions also utilize visual screens behind the stage.
Yeah.
How is that content created?
Yeah, great question. We have a design team and a group of artists here that work with that. And almost everything that we do is created and implemented in-house. So we've got some amazing artists, some that have been here numerous years that are just, guys are phenomenal. You know, we go down there and, you know, we pitch ideas and concepts to them. And then what they come back with, it just blows you away. You're like, oh my gosh, wow. Yeah, okay, that. Yeah, let's do that. That's great.
I've noticed that the screen content seems to flow seamlessly with what's happening on the stage itself. How do you make that happen?
Yeah, it's been a really neat addition to our productions, and we got the LED screen for the Jesus production, and So that was amazing. I mean, it's almost 100 feet wide, and it's little, it's 2 foot monitors, 2x2 monitors, all mm-hmm. put together, stacked together. Wow. And so the content goes in that. So we have that upstage, and then we'll have a hard set in front of that. And then we'll have like what we call a, you know, soft set or soft products in front of that, so that you get dimension as you're watching it. And many people have said to me, like, I couldn't tell where the sets started and stopped and where the screen began. So to get that depth is amazing. You know, it almost has like a film quality feel to it because of that. It's pretty cool.
It was just totally amazing when you had Jesus walk on water. And I'm just wondering, do you have to test this out for a long time? And do you ever go, oh, that's not quite right, and make changes? Or is usually, yeah?
Yeah, no, Deanne, absolutely. I mean, sometimes, you know, we get fortunate and it works right away. Yeah, other times it's like, oh, that didn't work at all. Let's go back, you know? So it's just, you know, it's the way it is. Like I remember for Moses, we had an effect that we wanted to do, the staff, the rod turning into the snake. And so that was one we thought, well, let's outsource that to, you know, a group in Hollywood that does special effects, and they could probably do that for us, because Moses was another huge production with a lot going on. So we sent that out to them, and then after a while they're like, they tried some stuff and they're just like, you know, I don't think we're getting this, it's just probably not going to happen, you know. So we're like, okay. So they put the ball back in our court, you know. And then one of our guys in the shop, he's been here a long time, he's an amazing guy, Jay Dumbach, he said, all right, well, let me look at it. So he designed really what was a simple concept, but so that the staff went down on this elevator, and then up came this snake, which was really like party cups, those plastic party cups all together with the skin on it, and moved it down on a line and disappeared. And then the staff came back up. So it was a simple idea, but brilliant. And that effect, I think, you know, so many people would say, oh, that was my favorite effect of the show. How did you do that? You know, because it just looks so awesome. But yeah, so that was when it took a long time, but it came back to our guys and, you know, they came through.
So it's like part visual effects, part special effects, and part magic. So when you're putting all this together, how important or how much do you take into account the historical elements that contribute to the story?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of my main jobs here is as a writer, you know, so we do a lot of research. You know, we definitely, you know, do a lot of historical research, like you've said, at the times, what's going on at that time, the context is so important. You know, we'll read a lot of books about, because we mostly focus on a Bible character and their story. So we'll you know, access a lot of books that people write about that and commentaries. But really, the biggest inspiration for us is the scriptures themselves. We just read and reread and reread and reread them, because, you know, if you think about it, it takes us about 3.5 years to produce a show. And so it's almost like if you were a pastor, if you were working on one sermon for 3.5 years, you know. So we just spend so much time in prayer and in study of the word. And it's actually an enormous privilege at times. It feels like an enormous responsibility too, because you don't want to, you know, get stuff wrong, you know. And for a lot of the stories, there's sort of the bones of the story, but then you need to fill it in, you know, to have a full show. And so that filling in is where the rubber meets the road. You know, I think for us, we've always felt like we want to fill it in, but what we fill in, we want to be supported by the text, so that you could go, yeah, I could see that happening because of the text. You know, we would never want to go outside of that, you know, but, so it's a fine line, but it's, my goodness, it's an extraordinary privilege to be able to do that.
Sometimes do you have to maybe adjust the timeline of a story because of the sets or the mechanics of, you know, what happens in the production?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the old adage, the show must go on. You know, we have an opening date and we sell tickets, and so we got to be ready to go. So, you know, thankfully we've always been ready to go, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's something that's always, the clock is always ticking. Yeah, it's really the first 6 months, you're just soaking in all of it, you know, because I think, again, like any pastor, you know, our show coming up for next year is David. You know, we release that, and that's on the docket. So, you know, how many pastors or preachers have preached about David over the years? You know, thousands. But each one of them has a perspective, something that the Lord puts on their heart that they want to bring out. So that's what we're always looking for. Like, Lord, what do you want to say through this production? Because he knows what's happening, you know, 3.5 years from now. We don't. What is the message that you want to get out there? So we just spend a lot of time just praying and researching and sitting with it and to see what he brings to the surface, you know. And then, you know, as a team, we acknowledge that, we confirm that. And so then we pursue that.
How do you decide which production you're going to do next?
Yeah, another good question. It's a leadership team decision. You know, obviously prayer goes into a lot of it, and the story department, which I'm a part of, will present options. And then the leadership team, which, you know, involves some different teams and leadership throughout our organization, get together and pray and talk, and then a decision is made on what shows to be next.
How many actors does it take to put on each production?
Yeah. Well, we have about a little over 40 professional actors, so 42 around in there. It varies slightly for each show depending upon the demands. But here in Lancaster, we also have a conservatory, a 2-year conservatory, a training program that's actually, okay, I'm a little bit biased because I'm the director of that. And we're in about our 10th year now. And so part of what we do with the conservatory is one of their years, they are in the show on stage. So that then in essence, our cast swells to 50, 52, depending upon the numbers. And that can, again, adjust by a couple. But so it's an incredible experience for them to be a part of that, to get the professional training in a show here at Sight and Sound.
So you have like a core troupe of actors?
Yeah. And each year there's some, you know, turnover. So 5 to 10 to 12 people will, you know, cycle in and out of the cast. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes as actors in Branson could come to Lancaster, and some actors in Lancaster could go to Branson. But there's some folks that would have been here for years, you know, and then others come for a season, you know, or two or three, and then they move on. So it's a variety.
Talking about the conservatory, who is that for? Who can get into the conservatory?
Yeah. You know, if you have a high school diploma, up to probably about 90, if you wanted to, you know, you could be considered, but normally our age range is about 18 to 24 in that age range. And it's a 2-year conservatory. So we focus obviously on acting, singing, dancing, training. And a number of our instructors are members of the cast with degrees that teach. And we have special skills, and the mission statement is professional training in the performing arts from a Christ-centered worldview. So it's, how can you be a professional performer as a believer? And what does that mean? And so, again, the fact that they spend a year in the cast is a great help with that. But yeah, it's been an awesome undertaking, and been a nice, a really nice avenue for young people who want some legitimate training, but in a Christian environment and with the kind of resources that we have here.
When I first was told about Jonah, it was all, you know, you got to see the whale, you got to see the whale, the whale, the whale, the whale. But to me, one of the most, I mean, that was incredible, but one of the most realistic moments was when Jonah was in the water. And I was thinking, you must have some sort of incredible system to fly. You have a lot of actors in the air, yeah. It seems like.
Yes, absolutely. We have a fairly extensive flying system, you know, that we can fly over the stage, over the audience, down the aisle. So we're able to bring in, and maybe you also noticed part of that effect in Jonah was that we brought things down from the ceiling, you know, to as he was going up, and then as he would go down, we brought the things up. So it's using our fly rigs, and then also, you know, winches that are in the ceiling, different places throughout the ceiling, to fly things in and out. So yeah, I mean, one of the things we really spend a lot of time looking at is trying to make the experience of sight and sound an immersive experience. Much like Noah, if you were to see it live, you feel like you're sitting in the ark. You know, when you see Jonah, you feel like you're underwater with him because it's all around you and over you and in. So that's something that we try a lot to provide for the audience, is that feeling of they are right in the heart of the action.
Another visual effect that you did live that I was very impressed with was pretty simple, but so effective. And that is when Jesus turned over the money changer tables and you went into slow motion.
Yes. Yeah. That was incredible.
Yeah. It's funny that, you know, again, not too difficult of an effect, but such a powerful and effective one, you know?
So who thinks that up? The writers or do you ever, like, you're doing something and somebody goes, oh, I know, let's try this.
Yeah, it's all of that. You know, it's whatever we do here, it's such a team production, you know. I've often said that, you know, when we have a production, even if you were a CSI agent, you couldn't tell who was responsible because the fingerprints are all over it, you know, everybody's. And that's really the way it is here in the design meetings and everything. The producer leads the charge, you know, and so they're following it through in every aspect, and the director right with them. Sometimes they're the same person, but with all of the different teams that you're working with, it's an extremely collaborative effort.
So I have to ask you this, and you may not want to talk about this, but do you have a favorite story of when something didn't go like it was supposed to?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, there's always those moments when you're working with animals. There's always those moments when the animals just, you know, let it go on stage. And so, of course, whatever's going on, it's all about that right then. So you can be having like a great scene and then, you know, oh God, and then it's, you know, it's lost.
Somebody called the poop crew, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's got to come out and sweep it up. So that's kind of you know. There's certainly been some over the years that you're like, oh, you know, some big technical thing doesn't work and you have to stop the show, and you know, then you wait and the announcement runs and the lights come up and the audience says, what's going on? You know, I mean, those are always, as a director, you're just like, no. But for the most part, you know, things work pretty well. I mean, everybody takes pride in their job, you know. And so, for the most part, it works well.
I want to talk a little bit more about the animals. When you use animals in these productions, are you bringing these in from trainers, or do you have your own sort of troop of animals? And who trains the animals?
Renee, great question. We have our own team of caretakers and trainers. And if you were to visit here, you would see we have a large barn out in the back, as well as numerous other areas to house the animals. And then we have an enormous ATF, we call it, but the animal training facility, where we do all the training. We have ramps in there. We have stage in there. We can play music in there. It's a huge indoor space, so we can train all the horses. So these guys are, this is their full-time job. They take care of the animals and they train the animals, and it's amazing. I mean, I think one thing you probably noticed in Noah, but is the what we would call target training for the animals. So it's simple. It's food-based, right? So you start them, you know, a small ways away, going to where the food is. Then you lengthen the distance, and you keep lengthening the distance to where they can run from the back of the house, down the aisle, up on stage, up onto the arc, and all the way through the arc till they get to their food. And it's all on their own. And I mean, to me, it's amazing. I've seen it, you know, 1,000 times, but it's still amazing to me, you know?
Each one of your shows has its own original score. Who writes the music and who performs the music?
Yeah, I know. Great question, boy. We use a variety of composers for each show. Sometimes we'll have one composer for the show. Other times we'll have some collaboration of different composers for a show. Lately we've had the people in-house to do the shows. Kristen Brewer is a woman on our story team and just a brilliant woman. And she wrote some of the music for Jesus. She wrote all of the music for Queen Esther, along with another woman. She's actually, we contract her in, but her name is Aiden. And she does the scoring and all of the instrumental, and then works with Kristen on all of that. So with David, we have another composer from the West Coast, a gentleman by the name of Gabriel. And so he comes and he's doing the music from there with Kristen, with Aiden, with a couple other people. And so sometimes it's a very collaborative effort, and then sometimes we do it in-house. Sometimes we contract composers. So it's just different for every show. It's really what the producer feels like, you know, they want to do and what kind of sound or theme or vibe they want for the music for that show. And then as far as the recording goes, we've gone to different places. We've gone to Nashville. We've gone to London. We've gone to Prague. We've had a group out of Macedonia, I believe, do it. So we've LA. So we've used different orchestras around for different sounds, and different composers like to work with different orchestras that they have a relationship with. And then as far as the singing, we use our own actors to sing the music. And so when you buy the album, you'll hear our singers doing that. The older shows, you might hear some Nashville singers doing that, but we made a switch a few years back to use all of our own people. So what you hear now is the people that if you came to see the show, you'd hear them sing it.
Do you ever write a script and you have certain actors in mind when you write it?
Well, that's a good question. We, you know, we know who we have here. And so we know when we're writing something, who could potentially play those roles. But then each year we're also auditioning and looking for certain people, you know, to fill roles. And because we want to give people a chance who would love to work here as well. But then we also want to, you know, honor and the people that are already with us. So yeah, we do. But then we're also just, you know, kind of writing the role as the role we feel needs to be written, you know?
Costuming is also a very important part of bringing period pieces to life. Could you talk about your costume department and how you strive to get the costumes historically accurate?
Yeah. Well, you know, you're right. That's such a big part of what we do. And the costume department, man, they are They are heroes. It's a pretty big department. There's a lot of ladies that work down there, and our costume designer, LaShonda Aldifer, has been here for many years. And we strive to find that balance between, you know, sort of historical context, but then also stage worthy, you know? Because, I mean, we don't just want to put a bunch of brown tunics on everybody, you know? So you've got to glam it up a bit for the stage, you know, and then it also has to, like, our runs are long, you know, eight months sometimes, you know, sometimes 2 years in a row. So the costumes have to hold up. But then, like, for instance, Queen Esther, the producer, director, Dan Deal, one of his strengths is costuming. So he works very closely with LaShonda, and the costumes in Esther, I don't know if you've seen that, but they are just spectacular. And so, so much goes into that. So it is that balance between, you know, some historical accuracy and then also being stage worthy. You know, what we try to do is have the costumes help tell the story. It's probably the first part that we want to honor.
Sometimes I'm thinking, how many wigs do these guys have?
Oh, so many wigs. Yeah, that's another, the hair department, right? Yeah, they're biblical stories. So yeah, wigs, beards. Yeah, there's a lot.
So aside from being theatrical productions, as you said before, Sight and Sound is also a ministry. Do you get feedback that it has actually impacted people's lives?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's honestly why we do it, you know. So many incredible just stories over the year. I mean, we could talk for hours really about it, to just see how God has worked through it, you know, because from the very beginning with Glenn and Shirley, Glenn was a fifth generation preacher. And his life is about sharing the gospel with folks, you know? And so this ministry, that's our foundation. So in all that we do, that's the bottom line for us. So we want to see people come to the Lord. We want to see people come back to the Lord if they've strayed. We want to see healings. We want to see families restored. You know, we want to see people just get on fire for God. And so in all that we do, that's always churning underneath it all. So many just testimonies over the year, so many salvations. There's been so many salvations. And again, this is, we can't take credit for any of this, right? I mean, we do our part, but it's the Spirit of God that's doing all of that, you know? And that's the amazing thing is that, like, so we have so many letters about people on the ride home, whether it be like, you know, as we were driving home, our daughter, who was 8 years old, had questions about the show, and we were able to lead her to the Lord in the car, you know? Or, you know, our son, who we kind of dragged to the production, you know, on the way home, had all these incredible insights and questions about it, you know, and now he's coming to church with us again, you know, or things like that. I remember some of the ones even in, I remember when we did Joseph, because Joseph was such a show on forgiveness. I'll never forget it. Opening night, we did the show, and that night someone had told me that a friend of theirs said to them, I'm going to start crying talking about it. But it was a woman, and she said, I have not talked to my father in 30 years. She said, I'm going to call him tonight. You know, so those are the kinds of things that, again, it's like we're just trying to be stewards of what we've been given, but it's the Holy Spirit that's working on people's hearts. You know, all the glory of that goes to God because he's the one who reaches out, but, you know, he works through his word, you know, and so we try to bring the Bible to life to people so that the Holy Spirit, you know, just has another avenue to work, you know. And so that those kinds of stories, so many more over the years, are the ones that just fuel us every day. It makes it a joy and a privilege to come to work.
And everyone may not be able to go to Pennsylvania, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, or to Branson, Missouri to attend a show. But now you're offering the productions on Sight and Sound TV. Can you tell us about Sight and Sound TV and how people can access it?
Yeah, I mean, if you go to our website, sight-sound.com, and you can access it that way. It's really apparent there. But that's another one that we'd always sort of talked about that kind of thing, but just we're so busy producing shows, we never really kind of got to it. But then, again, because of the pandemic, through a whole series of events, it was really birthed out of that, because at Easter, normally Easter is such a big time of year for us. And we were shut down, like as so many other places. But we had the production of Jesus filmed. And so our chief creative officer, Josh Enck, and the leadership is just impressed upon their hearts. Let's see if we can get this out, if we can do something. So they were just in, made some calls around it. They got connected with TBN and they worked it out to just provide the show for free, just put it out there for Easter weekend, just because, we wanted to just do something to bless people, in the middle of all the stuff. And that weekend, I mean, the estimates kind of vary, but anywhere from 3 to 5 million people viewed it that weekend. And, the results were just amazing. Again, salvation, so many people blessed by it, that afterwards it just said, okay, maybe we should pursue this a little bit more. So it just kind of opened up the door for that avenue for us, so it's been a blessing.
Are you thinking, I would think it's hard to bring back a huge production. I don't know if you have the sets in a big storage area or whatever, but are you thinking of going back and filming some of the earlier performances of different shows?
I don't know that we've talked about that, because what happens over the years is for the older shows, we can sometimes cannibalize those sets and use them or augment them for the newer shows, and even costumes that can happen with. So some of the way back older shows, not so much. Those are pretty much either have been absorbed into newer shows or, those sets have been done away with. We always want to keep offering something new to our audiences. It's so important to us that folks have a quality experience when they come, because we know the sacrifice it is for a family to come and take the money and the time and the effort to bring their family to our place. So we want them to have a fantastic experience.
So what are some of the other upcoming shows? I mean, we know David, but are you still thinking about beyond that, or are you just concentrating on that for now?
We are. In fact, we're always in production, working on the next one. Unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to say today. I know, I wish I could, but I can't. But there's more coming. Yes, for sure.
If you told us, you'd have to kill us.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that.
So from the very beginning of Sight and Sound, it's been a family affair. How is the Eshelman family still involved with Sight and Sound today?
Yeah. Boy, such good questions today, ladies. You guys have really done your research. You guys are amazing. Really. No, it's awesome. This is really cool because so the first generation is Glenn and Shirley, right? And they had four daughters. And so their four daughters are now the board of Sight and Sound. They are involved in the ministry of Sight and Sound as well, on varying degrees for each one of them. Some are very involved, work day to day. Others, don't work day to day, but are still involved. And then now their children are heavily involved in the ministry as well. And now even their children aren't involved, as many of them as child actors. So, for instance, Ryan Miller, who is Glenn's grandson, is the producer on David. Ryan, you know, literally grew up in the theater. In fact, he was probably baby Jesus in a Christmas production, you know, when he was first born. And then he grew up on stage and, you know, was in the shows. And then he got into our media department and really had an affinity for that and just ended up then supervising that department after a number of years. And then now this is his first job as a producer. And, you know, I was able to work with him on David, and just an amazing, amazing, gifted young guy. Reminds me so much of his grandfather. And see, you know, because I'm a little bit older, so maybe a lot older. So having the opportunity, like I got to work with Glenn, then I got to work with the next generation, you know, with Josh being Glenn's son-in-law. And then now working with Ryan, the third generation, on shows. So it's just been so cool to see each generation pick up that mantle and bring new things to our productions, but still keep the main thing, you know, which is we want to preach the gospel.
Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being here with us today. To see an example of Sight and Sound's unique and lavish productions, check out the Illuminations page at redriverradio.org. More information about Sight and Sound Theaters can be found at sight-sound.com. Join us next time on May 9th when we talk about the author of the New York Times bestseller, Crazy Love, Francis Chan's new book, Until Unity.
Thank you for joining us for Illuminations.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Red River Radio, our staff and advisory board, or LSU Shreveport.